The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah. Free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
Final Fantasy VII is over, but we're just getting started here on the Final Fantasy VII Recap Podcast on Post-Show Recaps with a very classic Post-Show Recap style opening, because Z13, you've done it. You did it. You finished it. You beat the game. Final Fantasy VII officially in the rear view.
It is currently my big accomplishment of 2021, is I have played this game from start to finish.
Oh my god. Zed, I am so happy. I'm just so happy. So happy, like, there's nothing to spoil anymore as it pertains to Final Fantasy VII. You've got the full thing. Like, I saw you retweeted that someone, like, tweeted out a picture of Eris on International Women's Day. And, like, you, like, posted, like, oh, my God. And it's like, you got it. You're hooked in. You've got the full FF7 language. You watched Advent Children?
I did. That happened on Friday.
You watched,
oh boy.
You watched the FF7 movie?
That I didn't know existed until about an hour before I watched it.
Oh my god. So, like, what do we think? I know, like, we're kind of, like, jumping to the end and not in terms of, like, the story, but, like, this is, like, sort of, like, maybe this is sort of, like, the so what did we learn portion, right? But my question is, like, so are you a fan of Final Fantasy VII? Like, where do you land ultimately, having completed the game?
Well, having spent, you know, 70 plus hours sitting with a PlayStation 2 in my room playing this game, I had a really good time. The end, like, kind of happens fast once you get there. And maybe it's because of the way we broke things up. Podcast-wise and, like, task-wise, but then all of a sudden you're standing down there at the bottom of the northern cave and you go to do those last battles, and you had told me that they would be kind of a piece of cake because I had done so much side stuff.
Yeah, you grinded out pretty hard.
Then they just kind of happen and it's done, and then there's not even really anything to play. You get, like, a final scene to watch. And then they're like, okay, credits, bye.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, bye.
The big reason why Disc 3 is so short is because of how much, I'm just botching the terms, how much data was used to load up the ending into that disc. Because it's just like massive nonstop FMV once that gets going.
Yeah.
And like, back in the day, that was, like, really precious real estate, to the point, Zed, that, like, that's why there's just the one save crystal in the northern cave, was because, like, they didn't have, like, the data for it otherwise. Like, they had, like, room for the northern cave in that section of the game to have one save crystal, dealer's choice where you want to place it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's much like life. Comes at you fast.
It does.
Yeah. But it's a huge accomplishment. And there is a part of me, Zed, that wonders, like, should we have, like, beaten the game and then done the side quests, right? Like, should we have tried to make this a little bit more of a challenge? Because You'll tell me the story of how this went. you'll tell me how it went. But I suspect it probably was fairly straightforward for you.
It really was. I sat down, you know, one morning and I was like, okay, here we go. And I had several hours to play, and I think it took me an hour and a half. And I was, you know, expecting hours and hours of sitting in front of the game, and then it was done. And I finished it, and I like sat for a minute, and then I was like, okay, Emerald Weapon, and like turned the game back on.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't want to be done playing.
Yeah. Did you beat the weapons?
No.
Did you do it?
No. And I have. So I finished the game quite a while ago at this point in real time when we're recording this. Because we recorded that side quest podcast like 2 weeks ago at this point.
A couple weeks ago. We are recording this one much closer to release for the first time in a while. We're recording the night of March 9th. For context.
I forgot where I was going.
It was a while ago. Between then and now, you've been like, I could probably beat
down with it for like an hour at a time when I don't have anything else going on, and I'll be like, I'll just try it a few more times. One of these times it's gotta work. None of these times has it worked.
Not yet.
And this morning, I was like, let's go check out Ruby Weapon just for funsies, because I've only done it the one time by accident when I just happened to see a red thing wiggling in the sand. And I was like, oh, what's that? Way too early. And even now, you go for Ruby Weapon and the thing attacks you like three times before you even get a turn to do anything. So it's just ridiculous. And then it sucks your players into the sand. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Do you want one last word of wisdom on a way to defeat the weapons?
Yeah, I'm still upset that I haven't done it. I have this game now. I'm not necessarily giving up for good.
Listen, when we do the next game that we're going to play, which we, I don't think, are going to quite announce at the end of this one, but we do have a plan. We'll tease that. I'll do a better teaser by the end of this podcast.
I can hear our Discord friends like screaming as they're listening to this.
Look. Well, maybe
they
want to
know so bad.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out. But this is from Entropy in the secret Final Fantasy Fridays Discord. Entropy writes in and says, "I'm probably far too late, but there are a few ways to go about this." Entropy, you're just on time.
Help me.
Entropy says, "My favorite Emerald Weapon strategy was to have Yuffie go solo by suiting her up with counterattack." I guess that means like you have the other two members of your party killed. By having Yuffie go solo, just by suiting her up with counterattack, four times cut, and final attack plus Phoenix combo. Mm-hmm. Conformer does more damage the higher the enemy's level. So you'll be taking one hit, then attacking for 8 times 9,999 damage.
Right.
So that's Entropy's tip for Emerald Weapon.
Yeah, before we sat down, actually, I went to go watch the walkthrough video of the end of the game just to remind myself, and admittedly got distracted with an Emerald Weapon walkthrough instead, because I am so stubborn and like irritated that I have not beaten this thing yet. And you get big, like, and it's just that easy vibes from the walkthrough guy, who I feel like is my friend at this point. I've watched so many of his videos, and he always starts them with, "Welcome back to Final Fantasy VII, my friends." So I feel like we're buddies. And he's like, "Look at how easy it is to defeat this thing you've tried to beat 100 times."
No dice. Entropy also has tips about Ruby Weapon. Entropy says, "I think Ruby has to be soloed by knocking out your party. Omni Slash and Mime is a classic strategy."
Yeah, that's what I've seen for Emerald.
Yeah, Entropy continues. "So remember, you can't necessarily cheese your way through with Knights of the Round because the mechanics of specific fights actually change depending on whether or not you use it."
Whoa.
So if you even use Knights of the Round, the game is like, "Ah, I see.
You've done the
thing. That's
things.
How you want to play." Yeah, it's like, "Oh, well, let me just take my My mittens off.
Your comfy mittens.
My comfy mittens. Let me just take those right off. Entropy concludes by saying, if you want to fight them, quote unquote, fair, I noticed you never mentioned enemy skills, but Big Guard, mm-hmm. which you get by manipulating some squids on a beach somewhere, is probably the most useful one. It gives the party barrier, magic barrier, and haste.
Yes.
Angel Whisper is great too, but I'm not sure it's accessible without going into the Northern Cave at this point. So maybe, which you have done, you could go back and get that.
Yeah. All hope is not lost here. I've spent more time on this than any adults probably should, but that's not going to stop me from spending more time doing it.
Also, Brutterman issued a correction to me. Brutterman said, just listen to the latest Final Fantasy VII podcast. I want to point out that Cloud's weapon Apocalypse has triple materia growth.
Is that that's the one from the... That's the one from the Ancient Forest
that I'm never
going to go get? Yeah, okay.
So perhaps that is the reason.
Yeah, triple growth would be useful because all the things are like, and when you have seven mastered versions of this and this thing and this thing.
Correct.
And it's like, yeah, I don't have time to do that.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm going to
do that. Those triple growth
weapons,
and then you go find the little bouncing red balls in the Eerie pools. That's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do. So just some tips. It's still out there. Look, this is the thing, Zed, is you're gonna embark on a new game after this one.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you have to give up on the weapons.
That save file will always be there.
And whatever we're gonna do next on the podcast, if at any point you defeat the weapons, we'll just interrupt this, you know, with the breaking news.
Dun,
dun. Yeah. This just in. So we'll interrupt and we'll tell the story whenever that happens.
Yeah, when it happens, the world will know.
Well, let's talk about the story of Final Fantasy VII. And like you said, I do think that this is like, there are ways in which this is straightforward and ways in which it's not. And I think that there's like a lot of thematic material that I think that we can chew on. And I was really excited for you to get to the ending because at the time, maybe you can imagine 1997, like the way that it ended before there was Advent Children, was like really provocative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like a really, you know, questionably dark, but like maybe like, hey, humanity, reevaluate your stance. You know, like it was a really powerful ending at the time that was actually, I think, pretty unpopular for a lot of people.
Interesting.
Because it's kind of ambiguous, it's a little bit nebulous, and it's also a little bit like, huh? What do you mean? We just the dogs? You know, so we'll get there. We'll do the recap the way we always do so that people who are just listening along and not playing the game and don't know and just trying to experience
totally
the story
lost
this way.
For the last 10 minutes.
No, they listened to the bonus podcast, I would assume. Not the bonus podcast, but the side quest podcast. Mm-hmm. So the linearity from that podcast to now continues apace. Also, apologies for posting the wrong podcast for like the five of you who are like, wait a second. Yeah, we fixed it. Everything's okay. We're fine. We got the podcast out. Everybody wins. We're going to be all right. I shouldn't dilly-dally shilly-shally any further, Zed. Let's talk about your adventure through the Northern Cave. And I want to turn the mic over to you to talk me through how it went down. Because if I'm not mistaken, there are like a couple of different ways that the Northern Cave could potentially play.
Yeah. So I had not been in, I hadn't gone and like done the Northern Cave before I went and did all the side quest stuff. And it wasn't until after I did all the side quest stuff that I realized the walkthrough is like, you can go like as far as you can go in the Northern Cave, and it is like a good idea to do that first because it'll make all the side quest stuff a lot easier. Well, too late.
Right.
Didn't do that.
Right.
But so going through the Northern Cave, first parking my ship in it was a challenge in and of itself. But once you get into the crater and then you jump down this like sinking sand, and it's like, it looks like the only way is down. Are you ready to go? And you go with your party. And then you sort of have to go through a maze of caves and tunnels and platforms to make your way down. And there's like a couple of different ways that are dead ends or that will lead you to some treasure chests. and you keep making your way, and you're battling all this time. There's some annoying gargoyles. There's all sorts of things that will, like, cause immediate death.
Yeah.
Where, like, the battle...
Did you struggle with some of the enemies?
My game never ended. But, you know, when a gargoyle casts L4 death on you, somebody's gonna die, and you have to fix it. So it was just a little time-consuming, more than anything.
Right.
A fair number of the enemies, I was at the point of knocking out in a hit or two because I had done so much grinding. But yeah, it just takes some time. So you get down to a point, and your party is waiting for you there. And when you get down there, you have to split everybody up. And there's a way to do it so that you get, like, two of everything that you're going to find along the way. I messed that up. I understand now what I should have done, but it's okay.
What should you have done? Just asking in case somebody who's played this game many, many times over the years has never quite figured this out.
Okay. So if you send them all a specific way, which is in the walkthrough, and how else you would know what to do is beyond me. Then when you get down to the bottom, after you've gone whatever way Cloud goes, you don't go all the way over to where the party is. You get down to that room, and then you go back up a different pathway, and you can still get, like, all the stuff is still there for you to pick up. Yes. And then you go down and talk to them, and they will also give you all the things that you just went and got.
Right. Right.
Which I understood.
And they, like, collect some cool shit. Yeah. But, like, yeah, you got to deploy that properly.
Because then I got just too far down at the bottom and, like, got to that screen where they're all standing there and was like, oh, this is the spot. Okay, don't go here yet. Except I already had gone there. And then I traced my path back up a different way. And I found, like, a materia or two. But there were other things that I was like, oh, this is where this thing should be. Oh, that's the thing that was given to me.
Yeah.
So now it's gone. Yeah, yeah. I get it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I gotta be honest. My memories of the Northern Cave are, like, a little bit skippy at this point. Because, like, you can't go these two separate paths. Like, there's, like, a long way and a short way, basically. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, if there's a lot of, like, tomfoolery that occurs on the long way. I know there's, like, this big, like, sort of, like, ragged spiral staircase thing that you can go down.
Yeah. Well,
it,
so
like,
there's
opens
first...
up to, like, sort of, like the spooky marsh, right? Like,
the Eerie,
like, spooky
Pools,
marsh.
That's where you gotta go.
Yeah. Is that what it's called? The Eerie
Pools? They're called
Pool?
The Eerie Pools. Yeah, there's two of them, and it's the best place to level grind in the game.
Uh-huh.
Because there are certain enemies that are not hard at all to defeat, but that reward you with, like, the most experience points and whatever the points are called to level up your materia in the whole game. So I spent a good amount of time running around down there.
And you were, like, fine without a save point? Like, had you deployed your save point yet or still not?
No, I did a lot of, like, go down pretty far, and then go back up
and
leave.
Sure, and then go all the way back up. Yeah. No, classic move.
I was very concerned about the save point not working.
I think it's so interesting that you even bothered leveling up. You had Knights of the Round, yo.
Yeah. I just wanted to do the thing the right way.
And
it's really
more for,
it's 100% more for Emerald Weapon than it is for beating the game.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. It's cool. I remember, like, the visuals of it being really cool. I've been playing the game with you all the way up until this point, but, like, life has gotten pretty crazy for me, so I didn't finish the replay. It's still waiting for me, I guess. So I don't have, like, a really perfect memory of how this went down. But I usually go, like, the fast way because I just want to get to it. I just want to get it done. But I remember like, there being, like, sort of, like, this ethereal quality to the Eerie Pools that was kind of neat, that it just, like, the environment was sort of
yeah, neat. it is like a marsh.
Yeah.
Unlike anywhere else in the game, really.
Yeah. Shades of Final Fantasy IX, Queen of Quen, the marshes. We'll get there someday. I look forward to that. All right, so you go through, like, any other, like, major incidents in the dungeon? Oh, I guess, like, the point I was going to make, Zed, was that, like, dungeon's cool, Northern Cave's cool. How's this for a tease for the game we'll play next? I think the next Final Fantasy has my favorite final dungeon of any of the Final Fantasies.
Mm.
That's my tease. Not saying that this is my favorite
tease.
Final Fantasy. Not saying it's my favorite Final Fantasy. I'm not saying it's the best in the series. I'm not weighing in on like the quality of the game necessarily, other than to say I think that the final dungeon is my favorite because it's unique.
Mm.
It's unique. It may be annoying to get through, but it's unique. And I think at this point, some people are going to be like, oh my God, you're doing it. All right. Anyway, so any other events that happened here in the final dungeon?
Well, if anybody is very meticulous about these things, I did go find the whatever the dragon is. It's not the dark dragon. I mean, I found those too, but there's one specific dragon that will teach you Pandora's box.
Oh.
And so only...
Did you open that up? Because that's dangerous then. Don't do that.
It only uses it the first time you encounter it. So you have to have your enemy skill materia equipped when you run into it the first time, because it's the only time in your game that you can learn this skill that I don't think I've ever used since I learned it. But it was on the list of things you could do, so I did it.
So you did it, yeah.
And yes, to our friend's point, I have been using Big Guard on all the difficult battles and frequently when fighting Emerald Weapon.
It's a good enemy skill.
Yeah.
It's a good enemy skill to possess, for sure. All right, so, like, you keep winding and weaving and going through, and you keep, like, going deeper and deeper into the crater until you reach this point where I think I told you, right, like, you'll find, like, a point that feels like it's kind of a point of no return. Mm-hmm. That's where you should save.
Yes.
Did you hold out until that point?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I think that's the right place, just in case the final boss is a real pain in the you-know-what.
Yes.
Talking about the butt. That's the pain.
Oh my God.
I'm talking about the butt.
Thank you for clarifying in case anyone wasn't sure.
I felt like it may have been
sure.
Nebulous, Zed. I don't know if like, people got it, so I thought I should probably point it out. All right, so you save, and then like you gather up with the posse, with the crew, and talk me through what goes down next.
So then you hop on the little stones into the very middle. So all this time you've been going down, when you first get into the crater and into the cave, you like see the glowing green light far away. And as you're getting down at various points, you can kind of see that you're getting closer to it. And when you get down to where the rest of your party members are all standing around on a couple of ledges, you're like right there at the glowing green place at the center of the planet. And so there are these little what look like stepping stones into the center of the pool. And when you go to head onto the stones, they're like, okay, are you sure? Are we ready to go? This is it.
This is it. Last chance.
Yeah.
And so like everyone eventually, and like you're hearing the howling of the planet. It's like, all right, I think we're going to go. Then Cloud has a fairly classic line here, I believe, unless it's later where this goes down. It's the one you screenshotted to me, and I said, like, no joke, I've incorporated this into my life subliminally. Do you remember?
I don't.
Yeah. It's either now or it's, like, after everything that goes down, Cloud goes, all right, then, let's mosey.
Oh, yeah. All right, everyone, let's mosey. I found
it. Let's mosey. And I have found in my life recently, like, I guess not super recently, because this is like back when people could hang out with each other. Like anytime like we would like be like leaving to go to the next spot or whatever, I would just say to like whoever I was with, I would warp the phrase a little bit into shall we mosey? and I say it a lot. I say shall we mosey a lot in my life. I guess not really on a podcast.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I should start. Shall we mosey?
Shall we mosey forth into the jungle?
Yeah, shall we mosey? I should probably be using on podcasts more often. But like back when I would be like around people and friends, like I would say that with some regularity. But when you texted that to me, I was like, yes, thank God, because I was going to bring it up.
Me up. So
I'm so glad.
So funny.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's go defend the planet.
Shall we
mosey?
So the world's on fire. There's a meteor in the sky. We are probably, like, I don't know, 100 feet away from a god that wants us dead. Shall we mosey? Yeah, it's like, Cloud, you weirdo. Yeah.
Followed up by, because now I'm in our text history, followed up by Sid saying, stop saying it like a wimp.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah. I said, probably the first time I've kind of agreed with him. Like,
I know. Yeah.
Let's mosey does not really encapsulate the gravity of the situation.
Of the situation. Of what's not about quite. To not quite. Not quite. You spiky headed little weirdo. Shall we mosey?
Take a lesson from Kate Sith. Use my stuffed body for the future of the planet. Yeah.
For the future of the planet. All right. And so you do mosey, and I assume that you moseyed with Cloud, Red 13, and Vincent.
Yeah, nobody else is really close in skill level at this point, more than anything.
That's your squad. That's your squad.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you mosey, and now you hop from thing to thing to thing. The music is
Genova music in the background.
Yeah. Genova's hanging out in the background, and I think that there's like the, is it an Iron Giant is the name of the enemy?
That sounds right.
There's like this gigantic, like, boar looking thing, like this humanoid boar with a sword that, like, the only sword in the game that's bigger than the Buster Sword. It's like bigger than the Buster Sword and Sephiroth's sword combined. It's like long, and it's like this huge sword as well. It's just like gigantic, and he cleaves you. I remember you have to fight a couple of those things on the descent, but you're descending into the core of the planet, and you're embarking. You're soon to embark on your first of a few boss fights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's, I guess, some like sort of randomly generated battles that happen as you're hopping from step to step. Like each time, you may or may not encounter another like big fight, but those were not difficult at all. And then you just keep on going and you make it to your Genova fight. It's here. Mm-hmm.
It's there. It's you versus Genova. And this is Genova. This is the one. This is the big fight. We've been following Genova all game long.
Yeah.
And now the moment has arrived. And like you fight Genova on like this sort of like translucent crystalline chessboard.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a big fight for you, or did you just Knights of the Round her in the face?
I think I kept trying in each of these fights to like do some other stuff, and then I was just like, all right, it's time, bring in the big guns, and we'll just take him out. But like that, as I've said before, the Knights of Round animation just like takes so long.
Long time. It's a good moment, Zed, to just like sort of like stand up, give a little stretch.
Yep. Get a drink, and let the cat out of the room.
Yeah, you get to like crack your knuckles, like just kind of like shake out your hands. Mm-hmm. Like it's a good time. It's a good time. But yeah, Genova, you know, Genova's a big scary animal, unless you got Knights of the Round and like King Arthur and Lancelot and all the other ones. Isn't there one with like a G Galahide or some shit? I don't know. I don't know. Should I Google the Knights of the Round Table?
I don't think
table?
It's important.
The Knights of the Round Table. Who was there? Who was on this thing? Who did we have?
Who did we come
Where
with?
Where are the members?
Who are we leaving
partial,
with?
Partial lists. Oh, this is too much Wikipedia. You're giving us way too many. Acolon. No one's heard of that guy. Who gives a shit about Acolon? Here, Cal Granant. Here's that. I'm going to say a name, and you're going to tell me, was this a Knight of the Round Table? Dinadan.
No.
That was a Knight of the Round Table. How about Galahad? Everyone knows Galahad.
Yes.
Yeah, Galahad's legit. Gaheris. Not to be confused with Eris. Uh-huh. There's so many Knights of the Round Table. Holy shit. This list is crazy. There's a Knight of the Round Table named Leo de Grance. I don't buy it for a second. No way. Come on. No way. Pelinor. my favorite one, Tristan.
Oh.
Sweet Tristan. Yeah. Dude, there's so many Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah, and thus
I'm not gonna
summon
count them,
takes
but
a long time.
I'm scrolling. Here, I'm going to start scrolling through them, and I'll tell you when I'm done. I'm beginning the scrolling now.
Scrolling is happening. It's happening now.
Now.
Oh my goodness.
Still scrolling.
These are all nights?
Done. Apparently, yeah. Allegedly, yes. All these knights of the round table. Some of the more notable knights may include the following. You just listed 20, if not 50 people. Anyway.
So the summon takes a long time.
A long time. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, but the Genova fight happens.
Yeah, when you have the Knights of the Round, what are you going to do? Like, you've got, like, this thing doesn't have a chance. Nobody's got a chance when you've got, like, 100 knights that deal 9,999 damage. Are you glad that I didn't make you
suggested
Breed? Strongly encouraged.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that I did it. I was never not going to do it.
No, of course. Yeah. But, like, it was so annoying to do. It is genuinely so annoying to do. Like, it was intensely frustrating to relive through your recap of the Chocobo breeding.
As
where it's like,
it
oh,
should
God.
Be.
Yeah, it's like, oh, God, stop it. But, like, it's worth it because the prize is just, like, a thousand, death by a thousand cuts. Mm-hmm. You're just, yeah, Genova, like, I think you, like, Knights of the Round Genova once, and Genova's like, oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
I guess I should have fought you guys. Yeah. Oof, my bad. Yeah, and Genova's dead. And so that's it. It's like, oh, that was it? You're, like, this big calamity from the sky, this, like, scary alien thing this whole time through, and, lo and behold, it's actually not that big of a deal.
It is a nice, like, through line, though, right? Because you fought a Genova arm so long ago, like a very, very long time ago, very early in the game, when, like, you were chasing Sephiroth, and then the image that I still have in my mind, even though I know it's not correct, is, like, that Sephiroth leaves and just, like, throws Genova parts at you. Like, he just has, like, this bag with
that.
Him, and he's like, have a tentacle! Ha! And, like, leaves.
It's a good distraction.
It's a great distraction. I know that's wrong, but I will always see it that way.
Yeah,
it's very funny to me.
Yeah.
But now you've defeated Genova. It's done. All gone.
So Genova's dead. You're like, oh, was that it? And it's like, no, it's not. This floor you're on is now going to crumble, and you were just, like, going to slowly drift on memory's bliss down to down to the core of the planet. And you, like, get to this core of the planet, and, like, it's the holy material has, like, been encased in some sort of, like, hard, gross membrane.
Mm-hmm.
And Sephiroth's there, and he's like, what, you trying to use this? Sorry. And everyone's like, oh, no, we got to fight this guy because this is the spell that Eris is trying to cast.
Yeah.
She's trying to cast Holy to combat the black materia and meteor. We got to fight this dude and get him to stop.
Right. Everybody's, like, suspended in midair, like, struggling against the force of Sephiroth, who it's, like, implied he's holding them all there in place. The walkthrough is very funny. It points out that, like, everybody is, like, struggling, and it looks like they're, like, running in midair, and Vincent's just, like, hanging out. because
he
can fly.
He's used to floating.
I guess.
Yeah,
so
he's good.
Just, like,
he's good.
He's just still and posed in, like, a very cool way.
So you get to choose your party. You're going to choose the same squad that you're always going to choose, mm-hmm. which is the right call. And then you fight the first of two final bosses, or I guess
Sephiroth,
the second of the three
Sephiroth.
Final bosses. Yeah. So this version of Sephiroth is called Bizarro Sephiroth, I believe. Which is probably fitting given what he looks like, if you'd like to attempt to describe this thing.
Yeah. It's weird. There are, like, wings. There are various heads. There's a lot going on. There's, like, sort of a, what is it, like a fish mouth with, like, a glowing,
like,
orb in it?
He's got, like, a fin, too. He's, like, got, like, Nemo's lucky fin.
Yeah.
he's, like, this weird giant purple monster terrifying thing. It's got cool music, mm-hmm. I think. It often gets overshadowed by the song for the final Sephiroth fight, which I think is probably fair.
Very dramatic.
but it is really, really, really cool. But he and he also has like sort of like this protruding like belly button orb.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That like weird, yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, he's got that. His hands are like fins and he's got this strange like belly button like core orb that is like keeping his like outstandingly massive torso upright.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't fully understand physically how that's possible.
No, I don't know. I couldn't tell you what all the various body parts are and where they are in relation to others on that figure.
It's an odd character design on this one. I guess it's supposed to be like Sephiroth and Jenova combined.
Sure.
I don't know. How many Knights of the Rounds? Just the one, right?
I think so.
Yeah, you just Knights of the Round. So it's like,
so
oh,
this is confusing because it tells you, like, after you've defeated a part, go check on your other parties. But, like, really, you don't need to do that. I did it one time. Well, I did it twice because then I wanted to get back to my guys so I could just, like, finish this game. Because I had Cloud, Vincent, and Red 13, like always. And then I had Barret, Tifa, and Yuffie. Or Barret, Yuffie, and Tifa, if we want to say things correctly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, let's be honest.
And then, you know, I
this.
Stuck Cid and Cade Sith off in a corner and was like, stay over there.
And they get, like, bounced out, too, I believe. Like, whichever two you don't pick just get, like, knocked out.
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't pay that much attention to them.
They do. Like, you know how, like the music's playing? It's like, oh, 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 oh.
Yes.
Yeah, and so, like, everyone's, like, hovering, like, fight around Sephiroth, and then, like, you finalize the parties and everything like that. And then, like, you all, like, he, like, summons you closer because he's just, like, pulling you in and then pushing you out. And everyone's really stressed out. And when you've picked your party, he pulls you in and then pushes you out again. And whichever two you didn't pick just get knocked out completely. They're no longer even in, like, the ring of heroes at that point. So you banished Cid and Cade Sith into oblivion.
True.
Yeah.
I don't remember that it even required Knights of Round, at least the first one. It was, like, a pretty straightforward,
maybe.
Just, like, use a couple limit breaks, hit it a few times with your ultimate weapons, such as ultimate weapon or Ultima weapon.
Right.
And that's about all it takes.
Yeah. And so you defeat this one, and then it's like, oh, cool. Oh, that wasn't so hard, huh? Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, like, fade to black, and then you hear the vroom, 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 vroom.
Dum, 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 dum.
Yeah. Iconic music alert. One-winged angel. Holy shit. Oh, my God. Sephiroth is descending from the heavens, and suddenly we are in the heavens. We're in the clouds because, Cloud. That's right. That's his name. We're in the clouds. And the sky is there, and Sephiroth is riding down from on high. He's the god that he said he'd become. He's got a wing for an arm. He's got his hair in a ponytail. He's got no shirt on, Zed, because he's just showing off at this point. And he is horrifying.
Well, he's very majestic, really. He's sort of like a... I mean, not like a centaur, because he doesn't have legs. Like, where he should have legs, it's like four more wings.
So he's like a Pegasus.
The one-winged angel is actually a five-winged Pegasus creature.
You party pooper. Are you really on here all these years later trying to besmirch the one-winged angel's end?
No, one-winged angel sounds very cool, but I literally had that thought as I was rewatching the battle tonight. I was like, but there are so many other wings. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. It's not that you're wrong.
Listen, I was totally ignorant of this game in 1997 and 2017 and 2019, for that matter.
And at least most of 2020, if not all of them.
Well, I certainly knew of the remake by then, because it was the best show on television in 2020, according to one Josh Wigler.
2020. He co-signs. He stands by it.
The five-winged angel. Damn it, Zed.
Listen, I calls it like I sees it.
I know you do. I know you do. So he's got five wings. All right, fine. I believe it takes two Knights of the Round to kill the one-winged angel. Was this an easy one, or did he manage to blast you at all? He's got one really massively powerful spell.
We did get to that point. We got to, okay. It's called Supernova,
Supernova.
Right?
Yeah. To the Oasis.
I like looked away for a second, and then I looked back at the TV, and we were in outer space, and there were math equations happening. A little bit
you
like
know
that.
How
like,
I feel about math.
A little bit like that conspiracy gif.
Yeah.
It's just like all these things happening. You're like seeing the whole galaxy. There's planets. There's like comets. There's a lot going on. And I was like, how did we get here? What happened? But then it's done.
It's because it's just like it's this meteor magic, basically.
Yeah.
Anytime I would like fight Sephiroth in the end of the game and he would get to casting that point, I would just like basically reset the game. Because at that point, like, I knew I was dead. My levels were not high enough to stop him. My only hope was to blast off Knights of the Round the two times before the supernova. Because the supernova, like, almost is guaranteed to wipe out your party unless you're at a really good level.
Yeah.
And, like, not just full health, but, like, obscene amounts of it. If not in the 9,000s, then you want to be pretty damn close.
Yeah, well, at this point, everybody in my party did have a mastered HP plus materia. So everybody's at the full 9,999.
Yeah.
So we were okay.
Smart.
We were okay.
Yeah, so you were fine. You were fine. But Supernova was really scary back in the day as like a kid when that would happen. But, oh, burp! But two KOTRs and it's a TKO for Sephiroth. And you know it's done because the music stops.
Mm-hmm.
And then like there's like this like crash of lightning. Joseph at the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat style. and like the camera then like cuts to a like extreme close up of Sephiroth's like emotionless polygonal face.
Yep.
And then another like flash. And then, like, the camera, like, zooms out as he just, like gets, like, Thanos dusted into oblivion. It's like,
Is he gone?
Beat the game? Is that it? And what's funny, I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, my memory of this is, like, you defeat Sephiroth, and then everyone just, like, kind of, like, wakes back up in that place where you put your save crystal. And I think that, like, literally Cloud is like, well, like, I mean, either we did it or we didn't. I guess we'll never know. We did our best, though, right? Like, everyone has such a lax reaction to that whole shebang.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. So, before that happens, there's also, like, a artificial fight between just Cloud and Sephiroth.
Oh, well, that comes next, I think.
Is that
like,
right?
Yeah, I think, like, you beat Sephiroth, then you show back up at,
oh,
like,
and
the
everybody
core
else
of the planet.
Leaves. Yeah,
everyone
leaves,
and like Tifa's like, "Hey, what's going on, Cloud?" And it's like, "Cloud's like, I hear him.
Yeah,
he's calling
to
me."
He starts to have his little like freak out moment again.
Yeah, and he's like, "I'm not gonna do this again. I'm gonna go and meet him in the core of the planet." And that's when like the ending FMV gets triggered, and it's like from this moment forward, or almost from this moment forward, it's nothing but movie time, and like Cloud like whips through these like ghostly astral plane like wisps through the earth, and when he reaches like this dark center, Sephiroth just hates a shirt, huh?
Yep,
because he's just like standing there waiting for you without a shirt on, just in like his like Ross Geller leather pants, and he's just like waiting for you.
Yep.
And so it cuts to a fight, but the fight is automatic. This is a no-lose situation.
Yeah, your limit break is fully charged, and it's your turn, and all you have to do is hit it, and you're going to omni-slash him to bits.
Yes, and this is what I was saying to you the other week, Zed, is
even if you hadn't gotten Omni-Slash.
It would happen here?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. Yes. But the other thing that could happen is, so like your limit break is full and you choose it and you choose Omni-Slash, which is like Cloud's personal Knights of the Round, where he like attacks like 12 times or something crazy mm-hmm. like that for, you know, maximum damage almost. If his stats are right. And so like you use that and you fight Sephiroth, and then Sephiroth, who hasn't like gotten a hit off, just is like, I feel like I shouldn't have invited you to the center of the earth. I think I may have made a mistake. And he finally dies. Or does he? We'll talk about having children in a second. The other thing that could happen, Zed, is let's say you choose not to attack, right? Like, because the onus is on you, mm-hmm. technically, right? Your limit break is full. You could push the button and you execute the attack. But what if you didn't? What if you didn't do anything? What do you think would happen?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. He attacks you.
Yeah.
He hits you with a very simple slice of a sword. And Cloud responds with an automatic counter, just a one hit back, and that's enough to take him out. Hmm. Too. So it could be very anticlimactic. Like you could just like go there.
Bummer.
You could go there, do nothing, like take too long to hit Omni-Slash, and Sephiroth might hit you, and then Cloud will automatically hit him back, and then Sephiroth's like, owie. And he still dies. So you can either like go like ham on Sephiroth with Omni-Slash, or you can just like kind of like smack him back. Either way, he did.
Yes. And now you watch a movie.
All right. Talk us through the movie.
Oh, boy. Do I remember everything that... I think a lot of crazy stuff happens.
Yeah,
I remember that. Like the getting out of the crater and the cave is like very bizarre. There's like some strange physics happening. Somehow you're just like back in the ship. Sid is constantly smoking a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a thing I remember very specifically.
Yeah. I believe at one point he goes, oh shit.
Yes. You get the word for once instead of just like a bunch of
it's like
symbols.
Square like determined, like the makers of the game determined, like
this is the one.
You killed Sephiroth, you're adults now. You bar mitzvahed Rufus Shinra style. Yeah. Look at you, bar mitzvah kids. Yeah. Yeah. You're all grown up. You can handle one shit.
Just the one. Yeah. Cause they're all like in the ship, but it's like going sideways. They're hanging on to stuff as best they can.
I think
can.
At one point, like, Cloud's almost going to die in the center of the planet. He thinks that Eris is reaching out to him, and that sort of like pulls him out of it. But it turns out that it's Tifa, because like it's probably Eris's spirit that's helping guide him out. But Tifa's the one who's literally there, and they like have some death defying stuff. And Cloud's like, she's here. I saw her, Eris. And Tifa's like, cool, you're just going to keep talking about her, all right. Cool, I feel good.
Yep.
I feel so great about it. You know, I'm right here. Yeah, and then, like, you get to the ship. Like, the ship, like, falls into the center of the earth.
Yeah.
And then, like, you fly out of it.
It's fine.
Yeah, you fly out of it. The ship, like, detaches, like, a bunch of parts, and then it becomes, like, this, like, tiny little ship in the sky that's, like, going even faster. It's like, hey, where were you? This could have been useful.
Yeah.
Especially with the Ultima weapon. Really would have chased him down much faster.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Yeah, and then Meteor is really doing a number on the planet.
Yep.
It's like right on top of Midgar, basically.
Yeah, stuff is falling apart left and right. It's really, really bad. And then...
Zed, I believe Meteor has breached our atmosphere, and the fact that the planet is still alive at this point is, in a game that is, you know, rather unrealistic, this is one of the least plausible pieces.
Strains like, credulity, to
this
say
gigantic
the least.
Meteor is, like, hovering, like, I don't know, like, 500 feet over the city?
Uh-huh.
Like, we're all dead. We should not be alive. No. And so remember I said we would see the baby bartender again.
Yes.
And there she is, Marlene, Barrett's daughter in Calm. And she kind of becomes like this person who starts to sense like the magic of Holy, that Eris's spell that she cast is starting to show up and fight back against Meteor.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of theories developed out of this.
Oh, yeah? Kind of
like, they're like, what's up with Marlene? Was she an ancient the whole time, too? Does that mean Dine was an ancient? And frankly, it's just all sorts of confusing stuff that they just threw in there at the end of the game I don't know, to this day, it doesn't fully make sense, even with some of, like, the post-FF7 content.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the children, ultimately.
The Advent children?
Yeah, something like that. And then it turns out that, like, oh, no, Holy's actually, like, this is calamitous.
Yeah.
This shit's also bad, apparently.
You start seeing the little green tendrils of the life stream.
Yes.
Creeping up and creeping up, and they're coming at you from all sides, taking over the planet.
Yeah, basically, I think so. Like, what happens is the life stream emerges from the planet and starts to not only like fight Meteor, but also I think it's like fighting Holy to a degree.
Mm.
It's like the planet like becomes like this third element here. As the life stream is sort of like poking out of everything. And maybe it's that like Holy sort of like blasted the way for the life stream to cut forward and like spew out. Like maybe like Holy was the cork or something like that. And the life stream is, look at me losting, was the wine in the bottle. And it starts like spewing out all over the planet. And like the music is kind of hopeful and exciting. But it starts to cover the whole planet, and I don't know how everyone's going to survive this.
Mm-hmm.
And the game doesn't really let you know, because like the meteor is there, and then Holy is fighting back against the meteor, and then the live stream is spewing out, and the live stream starts covering the planet, and the music is hopeful, and there's all these big bright lights that cover all of the characters, and the final image is Eris looking up, which was the same first major image of the game, if you'll recall.
Mm-hmm.
At the very start of the game where you were kind of like swirling through the stars, and then Eris's face kind of like shows up with all these like little pops of Mako framing her face. So it's almost like this moment's like connected to the ending of like Eris's wish came true. But was Eris's wish, like, planet, do whatever you gotta do to stop this? And then did the planet be like, yeah, I think all of you were bad. It's like Bugenhagen said. Bugenhagen was like, oh, the planet might decide we're not good for it.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the implication of the ending, Zed, I think, was for a long time, like, yeah, I think
mass
they killed... I think they killed everyone.
Yeah.
Because the credits start to roll.
Yeah. I was so surprised. I was like, yeah, I'm at the end of the game.
Yeah. I think I'd warned you. I was like, make sure you stick through the credits.
Yes. I knew to stick through the credits. I did not expect the credits to start happening when they did.
Yeah.
I thought we would get like at least one more scene with Cloud at the end of like, oh, well, this is what's happened.
No.
Nope.
No. No. You don't. Instead, you go through the credits and you get a Marvel Cinematic Universe post-credit scene, which I suspect you were mostly pleased by.
I mean, I was excited to see my guy, Red 13, starring in the Square Enix adaptation of The Lion King.
Yeah. Yeah. Hakuna Matata. Forget. No worries about your friends. That's so 500 years ago.
Squaresoft and Final Fantasy present The Lion King.
Yeah. Yeah. Because 500 years passed. Mm-hmm. The credits say 500 years later. I remember as a kid being like, 500 years later?
An unfathomable amount of time.
500 years later. Okay. And it's Red 13, your little lion, tiger, cat, dog friend. And he's still alive 500 years later.
Looking very cool.
He's looking awesome. He's like old and grizzled, and he's like his warrior father, Sato. He's doing him proud. And he's running along with his two, are they his great-grandchildren?
Even that's not enough generations. I mean, how long do these fire dogs, cats live for?
And not for nothing. So 500 years have passed, and Red 13 is not just still alive. He's spry as hell.
Charging down the way.
He's fit as fur. he's like thick, Red 13. And like he and his like little like great, great, great grandchildren are sprinting through the canyon, which I think you're supposed to initially think is Cosmo Canyon. Uh-huh. But the geography doesn't make sense because they get to the top of the mountain.
Like Pride Rock.
Like Pride Rock, and they look out, and Midgar, the great city of Midgar, is covered in lush, vibrant life.
Yeah.
Planetary life. Trees, water.
It is very much like after Simba comes and like returns to Pride Rock and gets rid of Scar, and there's a scene in The Lion King where, like, everything has been so, like, dry and destroyed while Scar was ruling. And then Simba comes, and you get this, like, time-lapse scene of everything turning red and lush, turning green and lush and growing again. And that is what Red 13 and his offspring, many generations removed, are looking out upon from the top of this Pride Rock situation.
Yeah, but no people.
No people.
No people. People are gone. Maybe they just gave up on Midgar and they're living somewhere else. But the deep implication is that 500 years after the events of Final Fantasy VII, we are all dead.
Nature is healing.
Nature is healing and humans were ruled bad.
Yes.
You guys don't get to stay here anymore. Seagulls? Fine. Seagulls get to stay. Seagulls are cool. Seagulls can stay. Like, the last thing is you see all, like, these birds flying over the ruins of, like, the beautiful ruins of Midgar. Mm-hmm. A bunch of seagulls. It's like, okay, cool. I guess seagulls are still... Who's feeding them? Who's got the baguettes to throw at the seagulls, Zed?
Anderson Cooper.
No. He didn't make it either. No one did. So, like, FF7, like, this incredibly... like huge release for a video game at the time, like, you know, like as like A-list as it gets, ends with the apparent destruction of humanity.
Yeah.
All your characters apparently die. everybody apparently dies, or at least it's up for interpretation that that is the ending, and that nature reclaims the planet, and nature has ruled us to be unfit to remain here.
Yeah,
that's a really crazy thing for a video game to do in 1997.
Yeah, it's not necessarily inaccurate, I don't think, but that is a dark thing to hand to children.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have like any like additional thoughts about that? Like once that happened, like were you like, oh my God?
I mean, it kind of, I mean, it is dark, but it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense to me. But, you know, humans have done irreparable damage to the planet. This is true in the game and in the planet that we live on in our,
yes,
in our real lives.
Yep.
And there have been, there have been other, you know, works of art and maybe works of science, I don't know, about the benefit to the planet from like a mass extinction event, and or the fact that we are very possibly headed for one because of the way we are treating nature.
Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't, it was confusing to me from like a playing a video game standpoint.
Yeah.
But it was not shocking to me as like an idea.
Yeah. But it was one of the reasons I wanted you to play it. but well, because I thought that like you'd appreciate it. I thought that you'd appreciate the idea that like this game, you know, ostensibly for children, as you say, like ended this way. It was very provocative.
Yeah.
I think that like a lot about my life changed because of this. Mm. I'm like a very imperfect human being. I am like a deeply flawed idiot of a white man. Like, I am a moron. I am a total idiot. And like I do things wrong. I don't recycle as properly as I could all the time, I'm sure. Like there's a lot of stuff that I'm just like an idiot about, like for sure. I think that like my life and like my place in the world would have probably been like a lot worse if I didn't learn the lessons of this game the way that I did at the age that I did. I think it was like actually really formative for me in terms of like, you know, like contemplating my place, not just like, you know, in the universe, but like locally, like on the planet, being like, oh, yeah, I guess like humans are dangerous.
Mm.
Like, I guess, like, we're, like, kind of, we could be pretty scary, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if the planet had its say, maybe we're not here. That was very profound as a kid who entered that game just thinking about how a character would influence his bar mitzvah fashion.
That's how you started the game? You were thinking about that as soon as you started?
I came into it with my bar mitzvah style goals, and I left being like, oh shit.
Hmm.
Oh no.
How shall I dress for my bar mitzvah? Let me play this game and decide.
Yeah. So like the themes of the game have been really resonant for me. You know, have really stuck with me for a long time. I don't know. I think, my hope is for a lot of people who played the game when they were younger that they like had like a similar profound moment. But I also do know that there were a lot of people who were just like, that's it.
Yeah.
Really? And like it obviously like generated a big desire for like, well, what happens next? And like a lot of theory craft work and stuff like that. And so because Square can't like learn its own lessons presented in its video game, they're like, oh, you know what, actually let's make sequels. You know, because it'd be nice to have that money. Let's make some sequels. And so they did. After a while, they trotted out some companion series. I believe it's called the FF7 Compendium. I don't know necessarily what it's called. It's like a suite of games and it's a suite of multimedia that expands the story of Final Fantasy VII. And you watched one of these things. You watched Final Fantasy VII Advent Children.
I did.
The cinematic sequel to Final Fantasy VII.
Surprise.
And you watch this with people in the Potion Recaps patron Discord.
I did. So I was talking about watching it. And some other folks said that they wanted to watch it too. And so we managed to pull together an impromptu watch party via an app called Plex, which was very cool. Mike Edwards set it up. And we all got invites on our various apps, so I was able to watch it on my television instead of on the computer, which was exciting. Really getting the full experience of this wild movie that, like, erases a lot of things that happen in the game. Like, who died? Who actually died in the video game? Eris did.
She's dead.
That one is for certain, and just about anybody else, not so much.
No, everyone else made it. So, yeah, like, the events of Final Fantasy VII Advent Children make it so that ambiguous ending of Final Fantasy VII is, like, not that ambiguous anymore. It's like, oh, no, actually, everyone made it. The planet's, like, kind of destitute, but we're all still alive. We're all so alive, in fact, that Rufus made it.
Yep. Rufus is alive and wearing what I started calling a business snuggie. Because he's wearing this, like, white shroud, like, sort of Jedi-like, almost. But the sleeves have buttons on them, so you know it's for business.
Yeah.
But the movie starts with the end credits from the game. So the first thing that you see is that scene we just described of Red 13 looking out over the lush planet. And then, and it's like, so this was 500 years ago, now we're going back 498 years. To 2 years after the game ended.
Yeah.
And all the Turks are around. Sang is still alive, who we thought died in the Temple of the Ancients, ?
Yeah, I guess he's still
Apparently
alive.
Apparently not. So everybody's there. And Sephiroth is there also.
Yeah, like, there's, like, apparently, like, these residual Genova clones who are, like, maybe a little smarter than the rest of the Genova clones who all have, like, strange, weird names. I'll tell you that, like, all of, like, the companion FF7 stuff, like, all of the characters have awful names. Awful names. It's like, I don't even know what they are, but they're just, like, so dumb. The, like, the world building for the FF7 sequel stuff just, like, really makes no sense.
There's, like, this random extra child. So, like, Cloud and Tifa are still hanging out together, and Marlene is there. Yeah, and then there's this other kid, Denzel, who's just, like, around. And, like, you kind of figure out where he came from and how he ended up being with them. But, like, you're adding more characters, but Red 13 is barely in the movie.
No, not at all, really.
He has one line, don't show up until the end. Like, an hour and 45 minutes into this two-hour movie, by the way.
Yeah. Like, the plot is effectively right that, like, so Midgar is gone. There's this new place called Edge, I think is the name of the city. I think. I don't know. I didn't know that until, like, 2 days ago, frankly.
And people have the stigma, which is, like,
a geostigma. Yeah, yeah. You've been marked by when the live stream hit. Just the geo stigma.
And Cloud is very angsty and emo, and, like, living in the church where you met Eris for the first time. I was so upset.
He still hasn't gotten over it. He still hasn't quite got there. He has, like, this, like, bounty hunter business with Tifa. And Tifa's like, hey, like, do you think, like, I don't know, like, maybe, like, you and I are ever going to be a thing? He's like, I gotta go. And, like, everyone keeps being like, Cloud, you're such a dick.
Like, Marlene is like, where's Cloud? Come back. Everybody has flip phones because it's 2005.
Yeah, the flip phones are great. I mean, I guess that they had a phone in FF7. That's the PHS, right? To call people in and out of your thing. But, like, it's like a globe-spanning adventure. Like, you go to the City of the Ancients at one point.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
The movie is gorgeous. Yeah. It really is. It's really, really beautiful. It's really fun. It's, like, it's a little cynical. Like, it is really trading in on a lot of nostalgia and just, like, playing the hits to a certain extent. And I think, like, there is, like, a degree to which, like, this movie only exists because, like, people were so upset about the ambiguity of the ending. Mm-hmm. Like, canonically, for me, I choose the ambiguity, and, like, I choose to believe that all the other stuff is, like, kind of fluffy. And, like, everything else that you get is, like, just, like, you know, additional servings of a thing that you already got. Yeah. And I include the Final Fantasy VII remake in that, which I want you to play eventually. Mm-hmm. And I'll set you up to do that at some point, but we're not going to do it yet. I need an FF7 break. I want you to see the world.
it's wild because the plot is terrible and the movie is not well written, which will surprise no one, but it's not. But it's beautiful to look at. It was very cool for me having played this game with the original graphics, to get to like see all these places and like really see them. Because the animation is really excellent.
Stunning.
It does not feel like a movie that was made 15 years ago in that regard, in that regard only, because the people in the movie very much have like 2005 aesthetics going on. And the movie ends with a Gerard Way song, which blew my mind.
Yeah, that's right.
I was like, of course, because it's 2005.
Yeah.
But the music is great. So much like really awesome heavy guitar. So it was a lot of fun to watch with a few other people. Mike and Kate both love this movie. So we had a lot of fun.
Has a great line, dilly dally shilly shally, which is like what Cloud is doing, not asking out Tifa. Mm-hmm. He's dilly dally shilly shallying.
And you see Eris a couple times, and it's very emotional.
It is, and you see like Zach too. Mm-hmm.
But like you hear the Eris music before you even see her, and it's just like so moving for a movie that is so poorly written.
Well, this is why I think when you get there, you're going to really like Remake a lot. Because Remake is, you know, it's literally remaking, you know, the first portion of FF7 into a full-fledged game. It's just the Midgar stuff as a full, like, 40-hour experience on your first playthrough, and then however much additional time you want to sink into it if you want to, like, really complete the game, which is what I did. I went crazy. I think I put 100-plus hours on Remake.
That doesn't surprise me.
I know. And, like, they've got, like the new add-on for Remake is coming out soon. Integrate, I believe, is what it's called for PS5. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely something that's in my future at some point. They're going to have, like, a Yuffie chapter in there. That's exciting. So, like, one day I definitely want us to, like, play it and talk about it, because it's not just that it's like, I think, like, rather artfully, like, re-examining, you know, the story beats from the original that we've just spent the last several weeks talking about, which has, like, a lot of merit to it. But I think, like, expanding a lot of stuff in ways that are interesting, expanding on stuff in ways that are, like, controversial for people who hold the text to be very sacred. I'm not looking at myself necessarily. But there's also, like, ways in which it is deeply, what's the word that I just said? That it's deeply controversial. Mm-hmm. That's the word. Controversial. It's, like, there are ways in which it is, some of the things that it's suggesting are really heavy, especially as an FF7 fan. And I think that they're, like, saying something very, very, very interesting about the nature of what it means to go back to something you love, to remake something.
Ooh.
I think this game has, like, something really powerful to say about that, that I know a lot of people actually hate.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, excites me in a really big way that I will be really happy to, like, talk that stuff through with you at some point soon.
Cool.
So we'll definitely go there at some point before too long. But I think, like, Remake does this stuff in a way that's a lot better than Advent Children, certainly, which is really, like, fan servicey and fun. You know, the music's great. You get another Cloud versus Sephiroth battle. What does it really add? I don't think it really adds anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that there's really anything that like it kind of like gives you or tells you that you probably didn't already have from playing the first game.
No, I agree. Yeah. There's like a serious lack of continuity between the two.
Yeah.
For a movie that's supposed to be taking place just 2 years after the game. Even if the effects that you're seeing 500 years from now didn't happen for another 50 or 100 years from when the game ends, the people that are alive in this alternate universe 2 years from now kind of like, yeah. You know. It makes it all very confusing and muddy, but it's fun. There's like a weird, yeah. like turn the children into a cult thing in a pool that uh-huh. happens. That's very bizarre.
Yeah,
that's go wild. Watch the movie. You'll have a good time as long as if you want to like go watch yeah. a good bad movie. You'll have a good time.
And it's not awful. It's nonsensical AF. Yes. Like it makes no sense. It really doesn't. But it's visually beautiful. The action scenes are really neat. It is cool to see some of your favorite characters at certain points. Mm-hmm. A lot happening with my guy Vincent, obviously.
Yeah,
he's like one of the most prominent people in the movie.
Yeah, he looks great. Barrett yeah. is a zaddy wearing yeah, like a mesh tank top.
Yeah, he's great. He looks incredible. Sid's like he's like screw it with the coat.
He
he's
looks just like as much of a douche as I yeah. feel like he is.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else looks interesting.
Tifa and Yuffie look exactly like you think they would.
Their costumes are different. I think that they changed their costumes a little bit, which is fine. Like everyone gets like some sort of like I guess like everyone got to change their clothes, mm-hmm. basically. And like Cloud is wearing like a hybrid version of like his clothes plus like some of like Sephiroth's residual stuff. It looks like
it would seem that the uniform that he and Zach were both wearing is a sleeveless turtleneck with a quarter zip that I could not get over for the entire movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's going to be one of the really fun things about Remake when you get there. Is that they, you know, the graphics are so stunning. So you'll see everyone in like the way in which they kind of like intended them to look based on artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like because they can render it, you know, like as close to photorealistically as video games get right now, which is not like, you know, there's still the uncanny valley quality. They're still clearly video game characters, but they like, you know, they look relatively real.
Yeah.
Like the textures are really compellingly rendered.
Vincent looks like Nikki Six, and I can't get mm-hmm. over it.
So I texted you the other week. I was like, I'm doing something really dumb.
Oh, yes, you did.
Yeah.
It was like I 5 days the other ago.
Week. Yeah. I texted Zed a few days ago. I was like, I've done something really, really stupid, and I'll tell you about it on the podcast. And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been watching a playthrough of Final Fantasy VII Dirge of Cerberus, which
is
another one. Yeah, exactly. So it's another one of these sequels, one of these FF7 like compendium, mm-hmm. these like compendium sequels. And it's a third person shooter in which you play as Vincent Valentine.
Uh huh.
And you go off on these missions to defeat a clandestine organization called Deep Ground, which was effectively a shadow Shinra that existed and was built in the event that Shinra went belly up. But so secret that not even anyone at Shinra knew about it except for President Shinra, Heidegger, and Scarlet. And they're all dead. And Rufus Shinra didn't get read in because he was only president for 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And so in Dirge of Cerberus, you are Vincent, and you are occasionally collaborating with Reeve, a.k.a. Kate Sith, except the game does make it seem like Kate Sith is his own entity. And in fact, at one point, it appears that Reeve gets murdered But he isn't actually dead. It turns out that Reeve was a human robot suit that Kate Sith was on.
Oh my God, no. What?
Yes.
No.
Yes. 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 So I'm watching a playthrough, and a shout out to Zacario in the Final Fantasy Discord. Who was saying, like, I'm watching this, it's horrible. I'm like, oh, I gotta check this out. I haven't finished it yet, but, like, the guy who's playing it is, like, so exasperated playing it, it's giving me life.
Yeah, that sounds
fun. It is really fun, where he's like, I have no idea what's going on, what is happening, this is so unfun, and you know how much I love Vincent, but I'm really, like, kind of, like, torturously watching this. I've been watching it for a week now, when I get free time, like, when I can just sort of passively have it on at work. But it, like, is really reaffirming for me that, like, Final Fantasy VII is Final Fantasy VII. All this other stuff, take it or leave it. I choose to pretend like most of this doesn't really exist as far as it impacts my main FF7 experience. But Remake gets really close to it. And Remake is doing something interesting where, like, I think I can view it in tandem with the original game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, don't watch this 9-hour playthrough of the Vincent game. Zed, that's Final Fantasy VII.
We did it.
You did it. Are you kidding me? You did it. You did it. I'm so happy. Exceeded my wildest dreams. I'm so pumped. What a rare gift for me to, like, have a friend who had never experienced this game before, experience it for the first time, not only for the first time, you know, 20 plus years after it came out, 24 years, I think, after it came out. But, like, to do it totally unspoiled and everyone being wildly chill about not spoiling you.
Yeah.
Like, you experienced Aeris's death unspoiled.
I did.
That's unheard of. It's crazy.
It is remarkable to me now. I mean, now I will see a tweet with a picture of Aeris, and I know that that's what it is, where I would not have, you know, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But now that I know what to look for, or I know what I'm seeing when I see it, it is incredible to me, because that thing that I retweeted, I don't follow that account. Somebody I follow had liked it or something, so it showed up in my timeline. And I was like, How much of this stuff has just been floating around in the ether that I have been, like, obliviously scrolling by and, you know, unknowingly dodging spoilers all this time for something I didn't know I wouldn't want to be spoiled on, ultimately, in 2021.
Yeah. Probably a lot.
Yeah. It's pretty, like, remarkable. You know,
it's pervasive. It's like a pervasive pop culture event. Certainly that character. Now you know what it means.
Now I know.
Now you've lived it very deeply, and that's awesome. I think that's great.
Now I can be upset every time I see her picture or hear the song.
Join the club. Join the club. They do such a good job with her in Remake. Holy crap. Oh, she's incredible. She's all the characters in Remake are great. They really do a great job. Remake
I'm looking
really,
forward
really
to it.
It's really, really good. All right. I'm debating whether or not to just say it. I think I may just say it. I think I may just say what we're going to do next.
I mean, folks want to play along, I know.
Folks want to play along. So here's what's going to happen. I think Zed and I, we're gonna take a week off on the podcast schedule. We're going to give it like a week-long buffer. And then we'll come back with like an intro podcast. And I think we'll like touch on the game a little bit. Like, I may have you play a little bit of it. Just like there's like a couple of things early on that I think you could do to just like sort of like start getting like a feel of the rhythm of the game, Zed. Mm-hmm. And we'll have that be like sort of like an intro podcast. And then we'll be really getting into it after that. Back on this Final Fantasy grind. But we are going to like put a pin in the world of FF7 for a while. I'd like to branch out and try something new, at least something new for you. And like, I thought about like, what's the best next step? Because Final Fantasy VI, which was for Super Nintendo, but there are versions for PlayStation, there's versions for iOS, which I'm playing right now just for fun. It's not fantastic. It's not awful, but it's not great.
because they like did like a weird graphic overhaul. A lot of people would tell you that Final Fantasy VI is the best Final Fantasy. There's definitely an argument. I really respect the argument. It's not my favorite, but I really respect the argument, and I love the game. The characters are great. There's like 16 playable characters.
Wow,
or something
that's a
like
lot.
That. I think maybe 14. Between 14 and 16 playable.
And 6 was the second one that was released in the States. Is that right?
No. So the first that was released in the States was the original Final Fantasy. And then the second released in the States was Final Fantasy IV, which was released as Final Fantasy II.
Oh, right. It was 1, 4, 6. And then 7 was 7.
Which was released as, 1, 4, 6, which was released stateside as 1, 2, 3.
Right, right, right.
But we're all cool now and we know to call them 4 and 6. And I'd like for you to play 4 at some point in time. That's my like sentimental favorite. It's the first game that I really remember playing in like really vivid detail. And 6 is like the game that like everybody, just about everybody swears by. But like if we
do
that now, yeah, well, if we do that now, like then there's like, I don't know that there's like, it's going to be hard to top. So I feel like we should put that off for a little while.
Okay.
I think it might be instructive to see what did Square do following like the insane success of Final Fantasy VII. What did they do next?
Uh-huh.
What they did next was a game called Final Fantasy VIII.
One would expect.
And that's the game we're going to play.
Dun-da-da-da!
You are going to play Final Fantasy VIII, which, to its credit, as I said earlier, I think has the best final dungeon in any Final Fantasy game.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it could be a little frustrating,
just a whole
but
game
just
like to get through to get there.
It's just like it's very like puzzly, and like the environment is really cool. The environment is unique. Like it's just like there isn't a game, there isn't like a final dungeon like the one in FF8 anywhere else across the series, as far as I can recall. But it's divisive, this game. It's got some systems that are, woof, you love it or you hate it. Brooklyn Zed, I have told you that even though I gave you my copy of FF8 on PSX.
Do not play this.
Don't play. I don't think this one you should play on PlayStation 2. I have said, Brooklyn Zed, get it on Nintendo Switch and bill me. Because like there are like certain parameters that you can use in the Switch version, whether it's like fast forward or you can unlock like sort of like you can toggle on and off like invincibility modes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few grindy ass things that I'm going to recommend to you that you use these codes for.
Okay.
You may stubbornly refuse and just want to play the game exactly the way that you want to play the game, buy the book, and that's totally great and fine, but I think you should have the option at least.
Great.
At the very least. I want to say a word to you that means nothing yet, but we are going to be saying this word so many times.
Oh, no.
In the weeks ahead. Junction.
Uh-huh.
Junction. The junction system. You like magic? Well, let me tell you about the junction system. Good luck. So I think the process stuff for Final Fantasy VIII is going to be really fun to talk through with you. Like, I'm imagining, like, somewhere between, like, it could go a couple of ways. One where you're exasperated.
Mm-hmm.
And then others where you just, like, you exert supreme mastery over this system. I could see it going both ways. And I want to explore this with you. So Final Fantasy VIII is coming next. It's a very wild story. It's got some twists.
We'll see what happens.
It's got some twists where we're gonna be like, what?
Yeah.
there are a couple of things that are going to happen in Final Fantasy VIII that will make for a remarkable podcast. And the other thing, too, is that, like, I'm very hot and cold on this game. Uh-huh. Sometimes I love it. Sometimes I really don't. I rarely have a middling reaction to this game.
Good. That's
but
fun.
This may be one that I am going to, like, not have a lot of sentimentality towards and instead be like, can you believe this bullshit? Like, I think that there may be a degree to which that... this, like, going back through it, and I'll go back through it with you. There may be a degree to which this is going to be pretty frustrating, but I think it'll be good for podcasting.
Yeah.
It's
going to be fun for podcasting. As I said when I tweeted out our episode from last week, as unfun as Chocobo Racing was, podcasting about Chocobo Racing was super fun. So
I think that there's going to be a lot of that stuff. And also, like, in terms of, like, side quests and stuff, whenever we get there, like, I haven't played this one super thoroughly, so, like, I don't have, like, as thorough a read on it as FF7. Also, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that Final Fantasy VIII, like, punishes you for leveling up, so you actually don't want to do a lot of level grinding, but you do want to go out of your way to draw magic, to use that junction system, train your guardian forces.
I know what a guardian is, I think, maybe, but all the other words you're saying to me mean nothing in this context.
Yeah, we're going to be members of Seed. We're going to be students at Balam Garden. Yeah, we're basically like boarding school students in this one. Sound familiar?
Huh?
Yeah. We got a boarding school to attend to and a whole lot of messy stuff surrounding it. Ready. If you thought Cloud was emo, wait until you get a load of Squall Lionheart.
Oh, boy.
That's who's coming up next. So hold on to your chocobos. Final Fantasy VIII coming next. And you can hang out with us in the Discord, whether it's the Final Fantasy Discord. If you want a link to that, you can hit me up at Rand Howard. I'm happy to send it along. Or if you are interested in signing up for the Poster Recaps Patron Discord, where we've got a lot of robust conversations going on there and doing some role-playing of our own, Zed, in the Dungeons & Dragons corner of the Discord. Very... lush Dungeons & Dragons corner of the Discord.
Indeed.
People should think about it. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. We play Dungeons & Dragons. You can play with me. You can play with Zed. We have a really fun time playing Dungeons & Dragons. So if that RPG itch is something you are looking to continue to scratch, that's available to you.
We've been chasing after a creature called a Burbalang, who I asked if the Burbalang was the ultimate weapon of the D&D game, because you keep fighting it and it keeps getting away and keep you have chasing to keep chasing
it. It keeps getting away. It's crazy. It's nuts.
Yeah.
So consider signing up patreon.com/postshowrecap. So we're going to take a week off in the schedule. I think Zed and I are probably going to get back into recording relatively quickly, actually, but we are going to try and build a little bit of a backlog to make sure that once the podcast starts, you're getting it reliably weekly, so we'll probably record it very similarly to how we recorded the final few weeks of the FF7 podcast. So that's hopefully not terrible news for you, but it's great news because it means we're going to keep doing Final Fantasy podcasts. So I'm excited. It's going to be fun, Zed.
Super fun. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to continuing. I am here to follow your lead down these various video game pathways. I know nothing about Final Fantasy VIII. I mean, I knew nothing about Final Fantasy VII, and now I know a lot. So we'll see what happens.
Final Fantasy VIII has a highly spoilable moment that is in the way that, like, the Aeris thing is, like, super emotional and sad and, like, groundbreaking. The Final Fantasy VIII one is, like, really odd, really weird, and a lot of people don't like it. And I still don't fully know what to think, but it has like a big spoilable moment that we'll get to.
It's going to be really fun. I can't wait. I think it's going to be great.
I mean, we're having a great time. We're going to keep having a great time.
There's going to be some shit that happens and we're going to be like, excuse me? There's going to be some stuff where you're like, what? Really?
I look forward to it.
Yeah, I think it'll be great. All right, we'll be back very soon with the first of our Final Fantasy VIII podcasts. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.